Booyah! And we are live, ladies and gentlemen. This was teased last week, but we're going to talk about it this week. The Heartland Institute commissioned a new poll with Rasmussen Reports that, once again, highlights major election integrity issues that will affect the 2024 election. We asked likely voters if they would cheat in order to help their favorite candidate win the presidency, and the results are pretty shocking. Also, there are developments in Trump's court cases that might be tantamount to election interference. We're going to be talking about all this and more on episode 445 of the In the Tank podcast. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Welcome to the In the Tank podcast. As always, I'm your host, Donald Kendall. And joining me today, I've got Jim Lakely, who is the VP of the Heartland Institute. And I'm just waiting for him to hit that. There you go. How's it going, Jim?
It's going all right. Do you guys know that Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas was impeached this week? Chris, I know you watch a lot of CNN. I'm sure they had wall-to-wall coverage of that on CNN, right? Is that the case? And then I heard that the Senate just immediately dismissed, they're charged by the Constitution to try to hold a trial for any impeachment. They decided just to immediately dismiss it. So, what we learn is that you can cook up fake impeachment charges over a phone call that a functionary of the deep state who covers Ukraine didn't like very much. And that's fine. And you can impeach him and have it and have that all go forward. But apparently, if the Department of Homeland Security head ignores all immigration laws, flies illegal immigrants all over the country to just settle in somewhere and then disappear into the population. Oh, and also while making sure that they register to vote and when they get a driver's license, that's just fine. That's not an impeachable offense. But making a phone call some guy didn't like that's impeachable. So, I guess I know this is a long hello, how you doing? But, I guess we find out that I guess that means that immigration will still be one of the top issues in the upcoming election. So I suppose there's a silver lining to this ridiculous dark cloud.
Jim coming in hot. See, this is what happens when he's down with COVID for the final 2 weeks. It all just gets pent up and he has to just release it as soon as
a little bit more starts. Energy. A little more energy today.
Sorry. I think the over under for Jim Rantz is at like a 3.5. Chris, editorial director here at the Heartland Institute, are you taking the over or the under on that?
Oh, I'm definitely going over. Definitely going over.
How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing good. And guess what today is? Today is the anniversary of Paul Revere's famous ride when he alerted the colonists that the Redcoats are coming. So just a quick shout out to my man, Paul Revere. The Beastie Boys actually have a song named Paul Revere from, I think it was Licensed to Ill. So,
sweet. Just, that's why you're, that's why you're wearing Adidas. The Beastie Boys. That's why you're wearing your Adidas.
That's why I'm wearing my Adidas tracksuit in honor of the Beastie Boys.
Fantastic. Jim, Earth Day is on Monday. Any exciting plans for you personally or Heartland Institute in general?
I'm going to turn on every appliance that I can. I'm going to use as many power tools as possible. And I might even fire up my spare generator just because. I won't even use it on the house. I'll just have it running on using gasoline. That's how I celebrate Earth Day, by making sure modern technology is represented.
Jim, on the episode that you weren't here for, we had Linnea on, I brought up this idea of irreconcilable between big tech and, their pursuance of artificial intelligence and other big algorithm type things that use a lot of energy. And on the other side, the kind of climate alarmist left and their fear of using, reliable, cheap energy sources. And I asked Linnea, like, you know, is there some sort of like weird relationship that could be fostered between the conservative crowd that is generally antagonistic towards the big tech, you know, when all the big tech censorship stuff was going down? And generally speaking, the Silicon Valley crowd is very left leaning. Is there some possible relationship, some weird odd couple thing that could happen between those two sides? You were in the background for that conversation, but I was curious if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, it just strikes me that big tech should be the biggest advocate for cheap and reliable energy. In fact, they should be the leading advocates in the country if they want to go green for nuclear energy. They should be lobbying the government to remove barriers to the construction of a nuclear power plant, which takes decades, and it should not take that long. They should be they should be testifying at congressional hearings, talking about how France, for as long as most people on Earth have been alive, have perfected and used nuclear power. Because if AI is the future, and just even current tech takes an enormous amount of energy, and so they should be advocating for this, and we would all benefit. All of us would have cheaper, more reliable energy. But they're not doing that because they are in a cult, the climate cult, and they are wed to unreliable, environmentally damaging solar and wind. I think eventually, and maybe this will happen, that reality is going to smack even big tech in the face, and they will come closer to our side on these topics than they are to the environmental left.
See, yes, I disagree. Sam. I disagree. Here's what I think is going to happen. I think that they're going to say, we are going to be able to use all the power we need because we are better than you people, and you're just going to have to ration.
We're essential services. We're essential services.
No, I think it's just going to be the usual thing of the rules don't apply to us. Just like, you know, they want us to eat bugs while they dine on filet mignon. So I just don't see any reason why they would not, or why they would adhere to the, to the policies that they are promoting for, you know, us, you know, peons here.
Yeah. So the big conferences, you know, Davos and all of that, it's always just people talking about wind and solar. Rarely does nuclear power come up, whether it's fission or fusion. But Sam Altman, who is the head of OpenAI, one of the largest AI companies out there, right? He was at, I think it was Davos, and he was in a panel, and he was talking up nuclear like the entire time as like some alternatives for like, as Linnea talked about in the episode a couple of days ago, it was a solution to like the needed base load energy source or something like that. And I just thought it was strange because there's nobody else talking about nuclear at places like this at Davos. It's always wind and solar. And I just wonder, and maybe it's about time, maybe we should muster up the courage as like the conservative think tank, you know, wing, whatever, of reaching out an olive branch to these like big tech companies and saying like, yeah, you know, I know you hate our guts when it comes to all of these things, but we actually have some common ground when it comes to energy stuff. So I just wonder. Maybe I'm being too optimistic, but I wonder if there's a weird relationship that could be fostered between these two groups.
I don't think so, because I think they would say, we still believe in climate change. You guys are a bunch of climate change deniers. Therefore, we would never work with you, even if, you know, our lives depended on it. And they will just keep going about doing what they're doing while they are saying the rules don't apply to us. Just like, you know, I mean, how many times have we seen at Davos where their carbon footprints are just a massive, gargantuan with their private jets and all their stuff? But then they stand up there and tell us, you can't do this, but it's okay for us to do it. So the hypocrisy, I've just said, I've accepted it. It's baked into the cake.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, actually, Chris. It's going to be the equivalent of when we had the pandemic going on. And there were essential businesses, and then there were non-essential businesses. And, you know, and so the elites and our governments get to decide who gets to have power and who doesn't. And I have bad news for most of the listeners of this podcast. I don't think you're going to be on the list.
And it would even further than that, because they were allowed to get haircuts. They were allowed to go to restaurants without masks. They were allowed to do all the things that us, you know, us unwashed masses wanted to do, but we were told we couldn't. And they were doing it flagrantly in front of our faces. I'll never forget Lori Lightfoot. I'm a public figure, so I go on television, so I need to get my hair done.
Look, she's pretty ugly. She needed all the help she can get. I'm actually going to give her a pass on that.
That was an essential business right there.
That was essential for the rest of us, believe me.
I don't want to give up on this. I keep my ear pretty close to the ground when it comes to kind of big tech and all of that sort of stuff. So I don't know. I am more optimistic than you. And I would like just the flat out rejection than always wondering, you know, what could have been. So it's something that I'm going to bring up from time to time for the rest of this podcast lifespan. So, you know, you're just going to have to deal with it, but we do have a lot of things to talk about. But before we get into it, I need to put that message out there specifically to our audio only listeners that are probably catching the show on a Friday or later. First off, why don't you leave a review for us on iTunes? It would be greatly appreciated. Just leaving a review helps this content be shown to more people. So I want to encourage that, but also, if you want to join the live show where we are streaming this on Facebook and YouTube and Rumble and X, you can by joining us on Thursdays at noon Central Time. You could join the conversation, throw your comments and questions in the chat. Maybe we'll show your comment on the screen. Maybe we'll address your questions on the fly. You could also help out the show by using that super chat, which we have enabled. That is a way to support the show. Or you could just hit that like button, share this content, subscribe if you haven't already, or just leave a comment on the video. All those things help break through those big tech algorithms that prevent content like this from being shown to more people. So anyways, we commissioned a new poll with Rasmussen about the potential election fraud, illegal balloting, whatever you want to call it, in the upcoming 2024 general election. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, the results were stunning. But before we get into that, let's do a little bit of a trip down memory lane, shall we? So back in December of last year, we did a poll asking voters whether or not they committed various acts of fraud in the 2020 election. And we didn't ask them specifically, you know, using the word fraud or anything like that. We just asked a series of questions that would be tantamount to fraud, whether or not they filled out somebody else's ballot on their behalf, or whether or not they had somebody sign their ballot for them, or whether or not they voted in a state that they are no longer a permanent resident in, and, you know, so on and so forth. And we were shocked to find that it was like 20% when we ran the numbers together and kind of grouped them on top of each other, it was closer to 1 in 4 admitted to committing some sort of fraud. And so we thought that's huge. All of this facilitated by mail-in balloting. And we wondered, you know, how much of an impact on the election could that have had? So we speculated here and there, but then we decided, you know what, we're going to put a paper together. So we put a paper together that was titled, Who Really Won the 2020 Election? And basically, we extrapolated the results that we found in that December of 2023 poll against the election results. And we thought that it might have an impact because of the kind of higher clip that Biden voters use mail-in voting as opposed to Trump voters. So we applied the results of this to 6 key swing states. And we found out that at a 20, whatever the percentage was, 25% level of fraud, that Trump would have won all of those 6 swing states. And then we thought, all right, well, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, what ifs and kind of, you know, hypotheticals about maybe our numbers were a bit elevated. So let's go down the line here and see, you know, maybe at 15% level of mail-in ballot fraud, who would have won? Trump would have won all 6 of those swing states. He would have taken the election. We go all the way down to 6%. You know, if our results overstated it by like 5 times over, it was actually just 6% of fraud in these mail-in ballots, Trump still would have won 4 out of the 6 swing states and taken the election. At 5 and 4% levels of fraud, he would have won 3 swing states. It would have ended up in a tie. And at the end of the day, Trump likely would have won that election. So even if our results from that December of 2023 poll were overstated by like a factor of 8, it could have still swung the entire election, the presidential election. So these were amazing results. We got a lot of press attention from it. A lot of, you know, different people were absolutely shocked by these results as we were. And then we tried to think of what could we do to kind of continue to put pressure on this topic of voter integrity and the issues associated with mass mail-in balloting and all of that. So Justin Haskins came up with the idea of, instead of asking people about what they did in the past, perhaps we should ask a series of questions of what they might do in the upcoming election. So again, working with Rasmussen, we put together a whole bunch of questions that are tantamount to cheating, asking people what are they going to do in the 2024 election. And again, like I said, the results were pretty crazy. We can go through it, but just based off my little kind of trip down memory lane, any other thoughts you want to throw in there before we get into the specifics of this poll's results?
No, the only thing I would say is that keep in mind the 2020 election was unlike any other in U.S. history because of the humongous amount of mail-in ballots. So what I'm concerned is that that is going to become the new norm. I'm sure we'll get into that in greater depth.
Jim, thoughts on this before we get into the current results?
No, let's get into it. I think some of our viewers here have some excellent comments that I'll put up on the screen, but let's get into what people are waiting for, which
Absolutely.
Is the results, the even more shocking or maybe equally shocking results of our latest survey about the future election.
That's right. That is right. All right. So basically, the way that we structured this was a series of questions. Each one of them by themselves could be some form of fraud or cheating. But what we wanted to do was make it so that all of these things group together, because somebody could have said yes to one and another one, but somebody could have said yes to one and no to the rest of them. So at the end, we have them all compiled into one giant number. But just going through some of the questions, I won't read all of them, but just some of the ones I think are a little bit more notable. Question three, if a coworker or a friendly acquaintance gave you permission to fill out and sign their mail-in ballot, allowing you to use their ballot to vote for anyone that you choose, would you? 17% said yes to that. And before I go any further, I also want to let you know that we were working with Rasmussen, and they painstakingly went through the results before they gave them to us. And eliminated all the ones that were messed up or whatever. Like, you know, people that just said like yes to everything, like even, you know, like ridiculous questions like that. Like anything that was like considered like trolling, they got rid of. So these are like as legit results as we could have possibly gotten from Rasmussen, right? Question four. If a close friend gave you permission to fill out and sign their mail-in ballot, allowing you to use their ballot to vote for anyone that you choose, would you? 14% said yes. If your spouse or another trusted family member gave you permission to fill out and sign their mail-in ballot, allowing you to use their ballot to vote for anyone that you choose, would you? This was the highest single answered one. 18% said yes to that. If given the opportunity, would you alter the candidate selection made in a mail-in ballot belonging to a friend or family member without their knowledge? 9%, nearly 1 in 10, said yes to that. If given the opportunity, would you throw out or destroy a mail-in ballot belonging to a friend or family member without their knowledge to stop Joe Biden or Donald Trump, whoever you don't want to win, from being president? 11% said yes to that. If given the opportunity, would you cast a ballot in two different states helping your favored candidate become president? 10% said yes to that. There's a couple more here, but when you compile all of the results, it boils down to at 28% of people, respondents to this poll, said yes to one or more of these questions. So that, depending on how you want to cut it, 28%, nearly 3 in 10 people. It's almost identical to the results that we found in the 2020 election when we compiled all of those for our report. So we didn't know what we were going to get when we sent these questions to Rasmussen. We thought it very possible that we would get back some number like 3%, you know, some within the margin of error number would admit or acknowledge that they would cheat in the upcoming election. When we got the results and it said 28%, we were once again just floored by that. So, Chris, what were your initial reactions when we got the results to this poll?
I mean, to be honest, I wasn't floored. I kind of expected that it would be around this number because I think that there's many things that are going on here. I think one of the things, and one of the viewers brought it up in the chat, is why wouldn't someone cheat in 2024 if they got away with it in 2020? And we know that there was a massive amount of illegal voting via mail-in ballots in 2020. I mean, that is not speculation. That is a fact. That is a utter fact. So to me, you know, there is no deterrent effect. And since there is no deterrent effect, people are going to go and do it more and more and more. I think there's also a couple major reasons why this is happening. I think one of them, and I wrote about this in an article, is the sheer expansion of powers within the presidency, within the executive branch, you know, in the past couple of decades, you know, especially, to be honest, under Joe Biden, where he is just, you know, issuing executive orders at the wazoo to open up the border and just, you know, cancel student loan debt and anything else. There's so much at stake in terms of who wins the presidency, which party, Republicans or Democrats, that I'm fearful that they are now in a mindset and in a mode in which it says, in which not only they are saying, like the parties, but the party's supporters and voters are saying, we got to do whatever it takes to win. Because if that other guy wins, then it's going to be, you know, terrible for the next 4 years. So I wonder if there's like that aspect of it at play here. I also think that the sheer availability of mail-in voting, which, you know, once again, you know, under the guise of the pandemic, all these states just said, okay, we're now going to mail out tens of millions of ballots, you know, absentee ballots based on these terrible, inaccurate voter registration rolls, that now they are trying to make that the new default mode of voting. So I'm very, you know, concerned that, especially in the swing states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and a couple of others, that since those states are going to do that again, is it too late? So I know there's a lot to digest here and a lot more for us to go through, but those are just some of the things, you know, that jumped to my mind, you know, when I saw these results.
Yeah, Jim, I've got some theories about this too, and maybe we could talk about some of these things specifically, but just top line. When you were sent to the top lines and the Excel document with the results, what were your reaction? Were you as floored as me, or as, yep, that's what I expected, as Chris?
Oh, gosh. You know, I'm so cynical that actually I wasn't shocked. I mean, I wanted to be. I was hoping, you know, I know that we put the poll out there, or commissioned Rasmussen to start asking the questions in the poll, which we had selected with their consultation, but it was mostly our doing. And we selected the wording of them very carefully, as you must, if you're going to get accurate poll results. But there was a part of me that thought, you know, it's kind of like the first poll that we had done. You know, my biggest concern was that we were going to invest, you know, time and a little bit of money into asking people if they had cheated in the 2020 election, and that we'd get back kind of a dud. You know, 3-5% maybe. I thought at best, you know, if we can get two digits, 10%, 11%, 12%, that would be something that the media could and should pay attention to. And of course, we got back a number that had a 2 in front of it. And so it became a much bigger story, and it really blew up, one of the biggest stories ever from a Heartland Rasmussen poll. So when this one went out, talking about what people's plans are or what they would do for their guy or to beat the other guy, if given the opportunity, I was hoping we'd get back the single digits that I was expecting the first time. So while that didn't happen, as you said, nearly or more than a quarter of poll respondents said, if given the opportunity in the 2024 election, they would cheat in a variety of ways to ensure that the other guy lost. It really shows how, as Chris had mentioned, you know, in the America that the founding fathers had envisioned bequeathing to our generations, you know, we are still, in the larger scheme of things, a pretty young country. And they had, I would imagine, hoped that elections wouldn't be that important. When elections are so important that you're willing to cheat, to commit felonies, to stop the other guy, that's troubling. That means that it's a government that is too powerful, that it's a government that threatens your liberties too much. We shouldn't be this invested, frankly, on who the next president should be. I don't think I wasn't alive then. I am older than you fellas, but I was not alive during the Calvin Coolidge administration, which was a pretty conservative administration. I have a really hard time believing that people were taking to the streets and committing violence and riots over the fact that Calvin Coolidge was president. And if Donald Trump is elected in November, we are going to have riots in the streets. We are going to have businesses and whole blocks burned down in cities across the country, just as they were poised to do in 2020, paid for by leftist activist groups and especially George Soros, at the ready to burn the country down if Joe Biden had lost that election. So the last part on this is, again, we asked in the poll, if given the opportunity, would you cheat to make sure that your guy won and the other guy lost? Unfortunately, as we have pointed out on this podcast many, many times, our election systems are completely broken. They are set up to cheat. If you wanted election integrity, our election laws would look a lot different. That, frankly, they would look like they looked when I was just starting to vote in the late 80s and through the 90s, where absentee ballot votings was basically just for members of the military or people who, you know, were living in their vacation home in France or something in November and wanted to be able to cast their ballot in the election. Today, we just mail ballots out to everybody, living and dead. We're apparently going to be giving ballots away to illegal immigrants when they get their driver's license because we have the motor voter law. So our entire system is set up to not just allow cheating, but to encourage cheating. And the American people know this. And so that's why they answered the way they answered in the poll, that if given the opportunity, they would cheat. And unfortunately, our entire election system is set up to give them a multitude of opportunities to cheat. And so this is when I really think your country is in a crisis point when people can't trust the results of elections. And we continue to go down a road in which we make it harder and harder to trust the outcomes of our elections because the election laws allow so much rampant cheating to occur.
Chris, how big of a factor do you think that is, this kind of loss of just credibility that the elections have in people's minds, especially on the right? That's just like, it just seems like everyone's cheating anyway, so I might as well cheat. Like, do you think that is like a big factor in why
I absolutely do. And I think that, you know, from 2000 on, you know, it seems like every single election from 2000, 2004, 8, you know, 12, 16, 20, it's gotten more and more divisive like this, where one side is just so, you know, intent on winning and the other side is so intent on not allowing that other side to win. And I think that what happened in 2020 in particular shows now that a lot of people have lost, confidence in the elections. And I was browsing through a bunch of polls, and in the early 90s, it was like 90%+ of Americans had full faith and confidence in the electoral process. Nowadays, it's down to less than 20%. That in and of itself is very dangerous, because if you now have 80% of the population that is saying, hey, we don't really trust the results of these elections, you know, what's going to happen down the road? What's going to happen in 2024, 2028, 2032, when, you know, a large group of people says, we won't accept this. We won't, you know, and is that going to be bloodshed in the streets? Is that going to be civil war? Like, who knows? But that's why I think it is so important to make sure that these elections are on the up and up. And once, you know, once you go down that road, it's very difficult to go back. You know, once the genie's out of the bottle with people not trusting elections, we've seen this all throughout history. Then it's just, you know, then it's, you know, it's chaos. We really do not want to see that in the United States.
Right. Right. Jim, I mean, Chris has seen it. I've seen it, but there almost seems to be kind of like an emotional response to just the kind of perceived unfairness of the previous election that is leading people to be like, well, if they're going to cheat, then I'm going to cheat. You know, right. Like, what is your response to that? Because, I'll give you my take on it, but what is your response to that kind of knee jerk reaction?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, you know, if you play sports and you're always coming up against a team that cheats, you know, you have a decision to make. Do you also cheat if they're getting away with it, completely getting away with it and winning because they are cheating. Do you keep your professional sports integrity by continuing to play by the rules, knowing that there's a 90% chance that you will lose because you are not cheating? I mean, I play, you can see a tennis ball behind me over here. I play quite a bit of tennis. I'm in several league teams. And when you're playing against somebody who, let's just say the ball is way in, but they call it out because it's a key point and they want to win it. Now, I could respond by also calling balls that are in out on my side, but I don't do that because I don't want to win that way. And I actually want to overcome the person who's cheating me of points that I should have won by winning anyway, despite the fact that they're cheating. I might complain about it, but I'm not going to retaliate by also making false calls of the ball on my side. But elections are quite different, aren't they? And so you would have to think, you know, with the stakes as high as they are and the opportunities as rich as they are for cheating, and apparently there is no penalty for cheating because nobody, it seems, pretty much nobody goes to jail for committing the felony of election fraud. So there is a great incentive when you think the stakes are so high in an election to go ahead and do it because the other side is doing it too. That is toxic for a free society. It makes our elections a complete joke. And, you know, to be honest, I would have answered no to all of those questions. As important as I think this election is, I am not willing to fill out a ballot for somebody else, or forge a signature or stuff a ballot box, because that's not the country I want to live in. About, 28% of Americans right. Do want to live in that country. And that's troubling, but we could fix it if we fix the election laws to make it as difficult as possible to cheat. But we don't want to do that in this country for some reason. Maybe on both sides, they prefer the system the way it is. I think that's creating a pathway to real civil unrest in this country.
Yeah, I think that some people's kind of knee-jerk reaction towards that, it kind of has this feeling of being like practical. Like if they're going to cheat, then we're just going to cheat too, Yeah. And I feel like that is just, like you said, it's just kind of further erodes, the whole institution of voting and whatever. But then like even practically speaking, because we know how the media works, they will ignore everything that happens on the left when it comes to cheating while simultaneously highlighting the cheating that goes on the right. And because of these like radical echo chambers that we find ourselves in, the left is going to just be inundated on all this cheating that's going on, that's happening on the right. And they're going to think that it's solely a right of center problem. And no, like there's going to be no time where, we're going to be able to play this, the rules or lack of rules as they kind of set up, and be able to say, I told you so at the end of the day. So I would never encourage anyone stoop down to this level or to say, if they're going to cheat, then we're going to cheat harder or something like that. I think that is a terrible thing to do. And then the last comment, and I want, Chris to jump in on this too, is just like, I think last year was like the year of gaslighting. And I think like this year, or at least this topic also has like an element of that as well. Where like they're constantly, and you'll hear Biden talking about this in like a State of the Union and other like campaign things or whatever, that they're like trying to defend democracy as if like the right is out there trying to destroy democracy. And in reality, like I see this problem. I see the poll results from last year and I see the poll results from this year. And I see the erosion of trust in our elections. And I think it is a horrible thing. I think it is an incredibly detrimental thing to society and something that I want to protect against, not from the right, but from the left and everybody in general. But for the left to run around pretending like defending democracy in our elections is like a left thing is ridiculous to me. But there's, Chris, thoughts on any of this?
I think there's another side of this. After the 2020 election, Georgia and Florida passed some very common sense election reform rules. Some, along the lines of you got to present an ID to vote in person. No excuse. Mail-in voting was, basically outlawed and, you had to have a valid excuse to vote by mail. And just a couple other, very sensible, prudent measures. What did the mainstream media do? They said that this was voter suppression. Joe Biden said that this was Jim Eagle or Jim Crow Eagle, whatever he called it, Major League Baseball removed the All-Star Game from Atlanta. Coca-Cola, you know, based in Atlanta, was you know, boycotting or whatever they were doing to, you know, Governor Kemp. So all those corporations were jumping in line with the media saying this is voter suppression. This is racist. They just don't want minorities to vote. But what's so interesting is in 2022, the 2022 midterm elections in both Florida and Georgia, what happened? Minority voting actually went up. So this is not about voter suppression. This is not about that. That's what these mainstream media pundits want us to think. That's what, you know, Joe Biden, the Biden administration want us to think, that this is evil, evil right wing states that are trying to prevent, you know, people from voting. That is not the case at all. It is not the case whatsoever. It's about really just making sure that everyone gets one vote and that that vote, you know, is not being abused. And, you know, if we do live in a media environment in which, you know, the mainstream, you know, legacy media and the New York Times and all these outlets are sitting there crying foul whenever a conservative or Republican state tries to do something like this, you know, that has a chilling effect. And that also then I think just, you know, emboldens the states like California with their, you know, ballot harvesting and all this kind of stuff. So it's like, unless we can all kind of get on the same page and say, hey, both sides here, we don't want mass cheating on you know, on any level, then I don't see like a solution here. Because, you know, it's also important to remember, and you brought this up in the beginning, that the Democrat Party, Joe Biden, received twice as many mail-in votes as Donald Trump did. And if you look at the polls, or if you look at the data, Republicans tend to vote in person on election day or very close to it. Democrats have taken a very different approach in the last few years, and they're all about their ground game. They're all about ballot harvesting. They're all about going into nursing homes and getting as many, you know, old people, whether they're senile or not, to vote. And that has worked very well for them. And I don't think that they're going to, you know, easily give up that advantage. And I think the pandemic just showed them, wow, man, when we do this on a massive scale, we can really get away with this stuff. And Donnie, we saw, those of us who were paying attention on election day, truckloads, literally truckloads of these ballots coming in at 3 a.m, actually after election day, so they should not have counted, mysterious boxes and suitcases of mail-in ballots just showing up, you know, right at the nick of time and just enough to get Joe Biden just, you know, over that, you know, that edge. That just sounds super fishy to me, but you know what? But if that is now the new norm and the default way that voting is going to take place in many of these states, thank God not in Georgia this year, you know, I just don't really see like how, like what can be done in the immediate future, because we've only got I think almost exactly 200 days or 201 days until the election. So, you know, what are we going to do in order to prevent this from happening again?
Yeah, and Chris, I mean, you were telling me about the, you know, kind of the rhetoric that was going around, I think in 2006 or something like that, because this idea of being like, you know, untrusting of mass mail-in balloting, this wasn't specifically a right of center issue, like as it is seemingly now, right?
Yeah, so Jim will remember this. In 2000, Florida, which was the crucial state there, mail-in ballots were coming from the military. And remember, like Florida was like a couple hundred votes that year, and the Supreme Court and the hanging chads and just all that crazy stuff. But I do vividly remember, because that was, I think, the first election that I really paid close attention to, hearing the Democrats saying, oh, these mail-in ballots, this is crazy. How can you have mail-in ballots? Because back then, mail-in ballots favored Republicans because it was mostly military members who tended to support the GOP. Fast forward to 2006. Former President Jimmy Carter and former Secretary of State James Baker came out with a report saying mail-in balloting is rife with fraud. It's terrible. It's got to be, you know, reformed. We've got to make it as minimal as possible. New York Times, like you said, also agreed with that assessment. Even NPR, who has a very bad reputation these days, in the months before 2020, I've quoted this article, said that mail-in voting is, you know, rife with fraud. So what changed? What changed is that after the 2020 general election, because that was during the primaries. And during the primaries, there were all sorts of problems, you know, with mail-in ballots being not accepted and blah, 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 blah. But they realized, wow, this really put us over the top in 2020. And that's why I think they're running with it. And that's why they are saying ballot harvesting must be, you know, illegal. You know, no excuse to absentee mail-in ballots must be, you know, the law of the land and all this kind of stuff. Drop boxes, unattended drop boxes, you know, all this just, you know, this crazy stuff. And they seem very, very adamantly opposed to the best way to ensure election integrity, voting in person with an ID as close to election day as possible.
Yeah, Jim, this just kind of highlights like how far we've regressed when it comes to having like, you know, fair elections and all of that. But I did an interview about these results recently, and the interviewer was kept asking me about like the need for voter IDs. And I was just like, this, all of this is like voter IDs is like two steps further than like, you know, beyond what we need. Like first we need to like shore up the mass mail-in balloting. Like voter IDs won't even solve that problem. Like first we need to get people to actually go to voting booths right before voter IDs is actually going to be like an issue. I think there is a question of like, what do we even do? Because like the solutions that Republicans have been running around with for a while, this voter ID thing is like not even an issue right now. Like it can't even be an issue until we can like take at least one extra step further. Justin is throwing around this solution where if you're going to allow people to do mail-in balloting, then those ballots need to be like certified by a notary or something like that. I think that is a very simple and elegant solution to this problem. I think it's something that could be, you know, initiated on the state level, like pretty much overnight. I don't know if that could be done between now and the 2024 elections, considering a lot of the state legislators are wrapped up for the year and all of that sort of thing. But I don't know. What are your thoughts? I think I've even seen some comments in this during this episode in the chat here, bringing up voter ID laws. It's like, I wish we were in a position where we were still talking about that right now. Like we're still so far behind that. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I voted in the primary here in Illinois a few weeks back, and I actually, believe it or not, had to show an ID because they wanted to make sure that the signature on my driver's license matched the signature that I signed when I registered to vote. I don't know, when did I move to Illinois? Yeah, you know, 2010.
And voter suppression. I can't believe they did that. Voter suppression.
Right? Yeah. So, you know, and two people actually looked at it, and one person actually asked the other person, do you agree that this signature matches? And he was, yep. So I was like, hey, that's fantastic. So when you do, what that actually shows is that when you vote in person, there can be a very brief, but a validation, as I received when I voted, that I am Jim Lakely. This is where I live and I am registered at this precinct and here's your ballot. That seems to me the very bottom that it should be as far as election integrity and protecting the vote, because every single, and people should take this personally, I've made this point before, every single illegally cast ballot takes your vote away. Just pick one out at random. And there's always going to be election cheating. You can't stop everything. But when it's rampant, you're talking about wiping out the legitimate votes of millions of people. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to my polling place, they validated that my signature was legit and they gave me my ballot. But when you receive a mail-in ballot, is there anybody there? It's impossible to check. There is no way you could know that if I mailed in my ballot, that was actually my ballot or your ballot, Donnie, or anybody else's. It's impossible to verify unless you do something like require it to be notarized. So that you have a witness that this is actually you. And if it's notarized, if anybody's ever had anything notarized, you know, you have to show your own ID and all that stuff. So that's the point of it. But going to massive mail-in voting when it's called voter suppression to clean dead people off of the election rolls, that's voter suppression. Not mailing everybody, you know, actually practically multiple ballots to make sure that they get it, that's called voter suppression. Asking people to show an ID, that's called voter suppression. You know, the people, I don't even want to say this is Republicans or Democrats or even left and right, just patriotic citizens who are concerned about the integrity of the vote every single measure that are very common sense and are not intrusive and are not racist and are not all sorts of other ists. Every single measure. There is not a, Chris, I'm sure you'll back me up on this. There is not a voter integrity measure small enough that the left, especially in our media, will not call it voter suppression.
Right.
If if you are not, basically, if you're not allowed to cheat, it's called voter suppression. That's insane. But that's where we are as a country right now. And it's very discouraging that we have to count on, frankly, the Republican Party to push this message and to push to have state laws, because states run our elections, not the federal government. And to and so we have to fight to get Republicans to even pay attention to this issue. And if it's the most important issue, not just so that Republicans can win office, so that the American people have a modicum of trust in the outcome of their elections. If you keep eroding the trust that people have in elections, because this is what we're supposed to live as a people with a government, not the other way around. And when elections don't matter because elections are rife with fraud, we are then a government that just happens to have people that they rule. That is not America. That is not the, how this was set up. And when you when people lose faith in the franchise, when they lose faith that their vote matters, that they are actually fairly, that they and their fellow citizens are fairly selecting their representatives in government. When you lose that, you lose everything. You are courting chaos and tyranny and worse. And it's so discouraging that as we've put out two polls on this, we put out an analysis on this. I know that a lot of state legislators out there are very familiar with these results. And they are very troubling. And the amount of action being taken to protect our elections is grossly low compared to what it should be. And frankly, time is running out. It's very discouraging. And if we this could be the 2020 election was pretty, I think it's safe to say the 2020 election was pretty contentious. And it it raised a lot of emotion in a lot of people. If we get a repeat of that in 2024. 2020 is going to look pretty tame in comparison, to be honest. And that should be concerning to everybody. And we need to keep the pressure on to fix our completely broken election system.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. The first time that I ever voted in an election, I remember going down to like the elementary school, never voted before. So I went in, I had my ID, my driver's license in hand, and I handed it over to them. And they like, oh my gosh, like as if I was like holding a knife out to them. Like, no, I don't need to see that. I don't need to see that. Just
right.
Your last name or whatever. So I said my last name and they're like, oh, yep, here you go. And gave me my brother's ballot. I'm like, nope, that's not me. Like, you would have known if you looked at my ID for 1 second. Right. Oh, yeah, sorry about that. They found mine, gave it to me. I'm just like, this is a joke. And that was when I was like, you know, 18 years old or whatever. But we still have a lot to talk about, so let's jump into something that's it's very similar, you know, theme that we've got going on here in terms of election interference, and this has to do with Trump and his kind of ongoing legal issues, lawfare issues, whatever you want to call it. But I've got a series of articles from The Federalist, and the first one I want to refer to is titled, Trump will be in court instead of campaigning for 8 weeks, thanks to Democrats' New York lawfare. So it says here, rogue Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg indicted Trump on 34 counts related to allegations that Trump had his then lawyer Michael Cohen pay money to pornographer Stormy Daniels, which Chris watched a whole documentary on. He'll talk about that later, I'm sure, to cover up an alleged affair he had earlier. Bragg claimed Trump falsified business records, breaking the law by having his company report payments to Daniels as legal fees instead of campaign expenditures. Legal experts say that, such as the Federalist Margot Cleveland, have called the indictment pathetic and partisan. Now Trump will have to be physically present in the New York courtroom for any proceedings involving the jury, which means every weekday. The only possible exception is Wednesdays when the court does not convene, but that depends on whether Judge Juan Merchan, who is overseeing the case, grants Trump's lawyer Todd Blanche's request that a presumptive Republican nominee be allowed one weekday to conduct campaign events. Oh, man, wouldn't that be great for Trump? You get one day out of the week that you can go and campaign. The judge also refused to give an affirmative answer as to whether Trump could attend his son Barron's high school graduation on May 17th. So, Chris, this just seems just beyond crazy, like very squarely in the election interference category, where Biden clearly is going to be campaigning day in and day out. Maybe from his basement, we'll see. Maybe via deep fake, we'll see. I don't know. But Trump is going to be basically just forced to sit in a courtroom, 4 or 5 days a week for 8 weeks? It's insane. What do you think?
Okay, a couple things. First of all, it was an actual documentary about Stormy Daniels. It was on Peacock. It was not part of her, you know, adult film collection. So just want to make that very clear.
Yeah, let's make that clear.
Yeah. So it's on Peacock. It's PG rated, I swear. Okay. So really what's going on here is I think it's just very simple. They are trying to prevent him from going out and campaigning, you know, in the days and, you know, weeks and months leading up to the election. Like you said, he's going to be stuck in court 4 days a week. Interestingly, he did go out after the second day of the jury selection process, and he went to the little grocery store, bodega, I guess you call them, where a couple of years ago, a legal immigrant in self-defense stabbed a criminal who was trying to rob him. And Alvin Bragg, the amazingly, you know, a corrupt DA, actually charged that man, who has since fled and is now in the Dominican Republic. And I think the charges were dropped with first degree murder. So it was no. But that to me is not even what this is about. What was so interesting about it was at that bodega, which was, I think it was in Harlem. There was a crowd. I'm talking hundreds, if not thousands, of Harlemites who were sitting there going, Trump, 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 four more years, get rid of Biden. And it was like, whoa, like, where did that come from? So that just goes to show that even among, you know, super duper deep blue New York City, wow, there's a bunch of people who are saying, hey, wait a second, we're sick and tired of this stuff, and we're going to come out in full force for Trump in 2024. Now, I'm not saying he's going to win New York, but just the very fact that that's happening, I think, just goes to show that the people of New York see through this. And interestingly, Biden was having a couple campaign events at the exact same time. And you should go and look at the footage. One was at a fast food restaurant. It was like a gas station fast food restaurant. It was horrible. He just cannot campaign. Then he did have an event. It was in Pittsburgh. He talked about his uncle being eaten by cannibals in World War II. And they were like, what are you talking about? His plane, you know, it lost its engine over the ocean. So he is just completely, you know, just not able to campaign. And Donald Trump is actually campaigning, and it looks like he's actually campaigning pretty well while he is facing these charges and sitting in prison for 7 or 8 hours per day. So the mainstream media, the CNNs and the MSNBCs are trying to say, oh, look at this. This is like all that matters. Everyone pay attention to this. The American people don't care about this, because the American people know that this is lawfare. They know that this is a totally, you know, corrupt, bunk, you know, bogus charge. And it's all about trying to prevent Donald Trump from getting on the campaign trail in these crucial months. But it doesn't matter. It's going to backfire. And the polls are showing that it's going to backfire, because the more that they do this, whether it's in Atlanta with Fannie Willis or wherever, what's happening to Trump's polling numbers? They're going up. So fine. Let them do it. I think it's actually going to backfire on them. And it's going to show the American people, hey, look at how desperate, you know, the Democrats are, and look at they're resorting to. Look at what they're stooping to. They're coming up with these ridiculous charges based on nothing, you know?
Right. Yeah. So Jim and I, another trip down memory lane, this is like post 2018 midterm elections. And like the way that the elections came out, and that's when Ron DeSantis was like reelected as governor or something like that. And there was a little bit of a feud that just popped up between DeSantis and Trump, which, you know, later we find out was kind of a prelude to the primary election or whatever, we were like, and maybe I can only speak for myself here, Jim, but we were ready to like get off the Trump train, you know, like, you know what, like just be a kingmaker, just pick who your successor is going to be, all of that sort of stuff. And then once all of these bogus court cases started being sprung up and all these bogus charges and all of that, it like secured us very much back under that Trump train. And I feel like that might be anecdotal evidence, but like group that on top of the anecdotal evidence that Chris just mentioned. And then you can group that on top of polling results that we've been seeing. I got another piece by the Federalist titled "Majority of Voters Recognize Democrat Lawfare Against Trump is Political Election Interference." And it talks about a poll from Harvard Caps Harris poll talking about how more than half of voters believe Democrats are, quote, using the government and the legal system in a biased way to take out their political opponent. And it says, when asked the question, do you think the Democrats today are engaged in lawfare, a campaign using the government and legal system in a biased way to take out their political opponent? Do you think that prosecutions of Donald Trump are fair and unrelated to politics? And it was like 58% agreed the prosecutions are lawfare. 58% of the country sees through this BS. And then I think even putting it more vividly on the screen, I have a quote here. No. I've got a video here of Piers Morgan breaking down the optics of all of this stuff on Fox recently. Piers Morgan, not necessarily the most right-wing guy in the world, but I think his take on this is right on the money. So Jim, if you have that clip already, let's go ahead and play that, please.
This is one of the most pathetic, petty, self-harming acts of political suicide I've ever witnessed. Donald Trump should go to his son's graduation. Right? Go to the graduation. Honestly, if you're watching President Trump, just go to the graduation. Every parent in America, whether they like you or hate you, will go, yeah, I'd have done that too. Because this case is utterly ridiculous. I always thought that this was the one that came up first. There are plenty of reasons to criticize Trump. There are plenty of cases down the line where there's a probably more serious case against him. This is completely nonsensical to me, that you would take a former president of the United States and you would put him in a courtroom over hush money to potentially a one-night stand with a porn star. And if he's found guilty, you may get a 10-year prison sentence. Have you all lost your minds, America? What a demeaning way to treat a former president anyway. But secondly, if you're on the left, why would you think this would possibly work? Why would you not think that what you're doing here is going to almost guarantee Donald Trump wins the next election? The only thing that could absolutely guarantee it is if he's found guilty and put in a prison cell. Because at that moment, Trump wins by a landslide. This is a farcical case. And if anyone on the left is watching this and doesn't agree, you have lost your minds. Take it to the bank.
Donnie, real quick, I have an answer to Pierce's question. It's called Trump derangement syndrome. Right. And I just cannot emphasize enough how crazy some people, even in my little orbit, are when it comes to the name Donald Trump. And it's so strange because, you know, in 2014 or 2010, when he was, you know, like a celebrity and doing his little show and stuff, they did not care less about him. They were just like, I mean, a lot of them, I think, were like, oh, he's kind of cool, you know.
Yeah, invite him to his wedding.
I know. The second he, you know, announces, you know, his run for presidency and he started to come out with his, you know, policy positions, they just went ballistic. And you can't reason with them on when it comes to this person. See, when it comes to Joe Biden, I don't have this like visceral hatred for him. I just think that his policies are terrible. His policies are terrible for the country, but I do not want to like literally torture Joe Biden and do all this weird stuff. That's what they want to do to Donald Trump. So they are not coming at this with a clear mind. They're coming at this with just their raw emotions, and their raw emotions just drive them to do these insane things. So yeah, that's really just crazy.
What do you think? What do you think, Jim? Do you think this strategy from the left in general is going to backfire? Do you agree with Piers Morgan there? What's your take on all this?
I would like to think Piers Morgan is right, and that if Donald Trump sees the inside of a jail cell, then the election is over and he wins in a landslide. I think that's delusional. It's almost hard to imagine that we are at this place as a country. We have the legal system, which is run by the left and in many cases run directly by the sitting president, Joe Biden, the rival for the next presidency of the leading candidate of the Republican Party, using the legal system to, one, keep him off the campaign trail, two, bankrupt him, and three, they would like actually to put him in jail. They, the left, and I don't think the Biden campaign, and I don't think Alvin Bragg, think that putting Trump in jail would be the Trump card for him to win the election. But we have, you know, this country kind of lost its mind, and especially our corrupt legacy media lost its mind about so-called election interference from Russia because they bought a couple, maybe not even a couple $100,000 worth of Facebook ads, and so in 2020. And so that election interference, we spent 5 years, or I should say our legacy media spent 5 years obsessing over fake, non-existent, never happened election interference that supposedly put Donald Trump in the White House. And here we have actual election interference happening by the left that controls all the levers of power in the Justice Department. And in this specific case, with the DA's office in Manhattan, in New York. The previous DA had all of this evidence, had all of this as well, and probably even the political motivation to bring these very charges, which are trumped up. Nobody would bring these charges, including the previous DA of Manhattan. Didn't bring it up because the case is BS. The United States attorney in the Southern District of New York also had this or similar charges. Didn't bring it up because the case is BS. But here we have Alvin Bragg bringing this case that even honest lawyers on the left admit is complete BS. And the whole system is rigged. And Trump is under a gag order. The judge's daughter has raised at least $33 million on the idea that they're going to be putting Trump in jail. And Trump's not allowed to talk about that because he's been ordered to by the judge. The judge told him, no, you can't go to your son's graduation. In fact, the judge warned him in very stern terms that if you don't show up here every day, if you don't show up in this courtroom every day, I will have you arrested. Now, I'm not an attorney. I never went to law school. But my understanding is that the Constitution preserves the right of the accused to face their accuser. I didn't think that means that if Donald Trump does not show up to court every single day in the middle of a campaign for president, that he has to go to jail. That to me seems absolutely insane. I think maybe the rule is often that if you don't show up in person, by the way, that's why you hire an attorney. They are your representative in court. To me, why does Trump even have to be there? Let his lawyers do the work and then they can brief him. That would be a reasonable compromise if our legal system and these partisan hack leftist communist Marxists were actually interested in preserving the integrity of our justice system. They might work out a compromise in which Trump is allowed to campaign for president as he is the candidate for the, you know, one of the two major political parties in the United States. They might have a compromise where as long as your lawyer is here, everything is copacetic. But you go out there on the hustings and campaign for president. Nope. If you don't show up every day, Donald Trump, I'm throwing you in jail and probably fines and all this other garbage that Donald Trump has had to endure. So to me, I mean, maybe I'm talking myself into agreeing with Piers Morgan. Maybe putting Donald Trump in jail would ensure the election, because I just start getting angry when I think about how the entire system, in so many ways that you lose count of it, have been weaponized by corrupt, devious people in control of our systems in this country, and directed all toward one man. You know, I it took me a while in the before the 2016 election to kind of come around on Donald Trump. I was never going to vote for Hillary Clinton. She would have been a complete disaster. She would have been the in succession third term of Barack Obama. And I thought his presidency on policy was terrible for this country. So I was not inclined to vote for Hillary Clinton. But by the time the 2016 election came around, I was happily voting for Donald Trump because of the way the media and the entire system was treating him with such contempt. And I thought, well, this is going to make their heads explode. That's a good enough reason to vote for him. At least it's one of many. And I think perhaps that is going to happen here in 2024. I think I don't necessarily believe it fully, but I want to believe Piers Morgan's idea that turning Donald Trump into a complete martyr by putting him in prison like Mandela or something is going to ensure that he's elected. I don't know. I have little faith, to be honest, going back to, you know, what this, the main topic of this podcast today is that our election system is so broken and rife with opportunities for cheating. I wonder if it's even possible to have an election that is fairly run, fairly counted, and actually reflects the will of the people. I don't know. So I'm going back and forth about it, man.
Let me clarify something I mentioned earlier. I said 2018 midterms. Didn't mean 2018. I meant 2022. The time flies real quick when you mix up years that are 4 years apart. You started off your talk like you can't believe that we're in like this current situation. And it really is like third world territory. Like I was doing some research into like other countries' elections and whatever, and I think it was like Indonesia or something like that. The main opposition candidate is literally running his campaign from a jail cell because he was imprisoned by the people that were in power after the previous election. It's like, is that where we want to be? Do we want to be like tantamount to Indonesia, folks, you know, where our political opponents are being thrown in jail and have to run their candidacy from a courtroom or something? It's unbelievable. Chris, I'll give you a final word on any of these topics that we've talked about in the podcast before I wrap up the show.
When I look back and see how the media treated John McCain and Mitt Romney in those elections and how they treat Donald Trump, is just, you know, unbelievable, like how far they have gone. And I don't think it's going to, you know, turn around at all. I think that, you know, they are going to just try to destroy him as much as possible in the next 5 months leading up to the election. And, you know, I still think it's going to backfire. I still think that most Americans are going to vote on their pocketbook, and they're going to say to themselves, in 2017, 2018, 2019, things were great. Taxes were low. Regulations were low. Businesses were, you know, booming. And then they're going to say, look what happened with Joe Biden's policies. This is not about personality, guys. It's about policy. It's about making sure that we have enough money to live. And, you know, under Biden, you know, people are not able to afford, you know, the basic necessities. And I think that that is what's going to drive most voters come 2024. So I just hope, that the level of voter fraud and illegal voting is minimized to the degree that it will not ruin what, you know, should be the actual election outcome. But we shall see.
We shall see. And obviously, this is going to be a topic that we will be covering on the podcast from the weeks leading up to the election and probably post election. Maybe part three of our polling with Rasmussen is going to be looking back at the 2024 election. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But very
interesting. I hope we don't have to do that. I hope we don't have to do that.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. But yes, I want to say thank you all for tuning into this episode of the In the Tank podcast. Join us every week for a new episode. For those audio only listeners that are catching this show on a Friday or later, why don't you leave a review for us on iTunes? That'd be greatly appreciated. And you could also join us where we are live streaming this on Thursdays at noon Central Time on Facebook and X and YouTube and Rumble. Support the show by using that super chat functionality to you know, guarantee your comment or question is read on the air. Or you can support the show just by hitting that like button, sharing this content, subscribing if you haven't already, or just leaving a comment under the video. All those things help break through those big tech algorithms that prevent content like this from being shown to more people. Jim Lakely, where can the fine people find you?
At J Lakely on X, at Heartland Inst on X, and always visit heartland.org.
Fantastic. And Chris Talgo, what do you have to pitch today?
Well, stopinsocialism.com. We got great new content up there. Heartland.org, a bunch of great content up there. And, you know, just please support Heartland Institute. We are trying to prevent, you know, the as Barack Obama said, the transformation of America.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. We will talk to you next week.
He's a lion, dog-faced pony soldier.